Well, welcome to Shattering Myths. Sorry for the brief delay. We're having technical glitches this morning. We'll seek to resolve them as we move through the program. But for those who are regular listeners, you know that Shattering Myths is a program that is devoted to the fastest growing and largest segment of society, to those who've come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, as are the people engaged in them, that they have become counterproductive, and there is no way to resolve these problems. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, is 877-300-7645. In Mogadishu, the dateline is that Al-Shabaab's top leader was traveling in a group when he was killed, and yet there is no change in the nature of the terrorist organization. The next day, they launched one of the largest terrorist raids in their history. Boko Haram's leader was allegedly killed by the Nigerian military, but not just recently, years ago. And now the person who speaks representing him is being presented as an alias. And yet Boko Haram's most vicious attacks have occurred after their leader was killed. I say this because now we have America targeting Ibrahim al-Baghdadi, with the idea that if the leadership of the Islamic State is somehow thwarted, that we will have a meaningful impact on the terrorist group. Now, if you look at a meaningless terrorist organization, one that America is fixated upon, Al-Qaeda, they ceased to be relevant long before bin Laden was killed. There isn't anything that Al-Qaeda perpetrated in terms of a terrorist attack, in terms of gaining territory, gaining recruits, gaining credibility in the last 6 or 7 years of his life. He took credit for the plans of another relative to 9/11. And prior to that time, his only claim to fame was his association with the United States CIA and Carter administration, later Bush administration, later I should say Reagan administration, for the express purpose of starting a proxy war, a civil war in Afghanistan. But long before he was dead, Al-Qaeda ceased to be relevant. It had, his death didn't affect the organization at all. And it is this backdrop that should be relevant to us when we consider the tactics that are being deployed by America throughout the world, which is to strike first and to think either second or never. President Barack Hussein Obama yesterday laid out his broad vision of the world as he sees it. He, of course, presented it as America's position, but it wasn't. It was his, although not his alone. I read the speech this morning, and I'm going to share much of the speech with you today. It is a speech that I would expect the Torahless one, misknown to Christians as the Antichrist, to deliver. It is the exact kind of soliloquy that we should expect from the worst among us. There wasn't any aspect of the speech that was true. The speech was purely hypocritical. It was as if you had a monster standing at the rostrum of nations, ruling extraordinarily poisonous, caustic come out of his mouth. Every word of this speech leads in the wrong direction. It is about a world order. It is about man imposing a new covenant. It's about one man's view being imposed on the world. It is about total and complete intolerance of anything that is different than the view the one elitist holds. And it requires a complete revision of history and a complete upheaval of truth to promote. I'm going to begin with an article posted regarding the speech, and then we're going to turn to the speech itself. President Obama told the UN General Assembly that the world had not confronted the intolerance, sectarianism, and hopelessness that feeds extremism. And yet, throughout the speech, Obama will promote tolerance. But yet he is opposed to intolerance. And what he is saying is that if you disagree with my view, the world should be intolerant of you. But it should be tolerant of those who acquiesce to my view of the world. You cannot be intolerant. You cannot be opposed to intolerance and be tolerant. To promote tolerance is to be opposed to intolerance. And yet this president is opposed to intolerance and pretends to be for tolerance. It is impossible. If you want to be tolerant of all, then you can't be intolerant of any. Now, the fact is that we should promote intolerance rather than tolerance. If we were intolerant of Islam, the world would be a vastly better place. If we were intolerant of established militaries, the world would be a much safer place. If we were intolerant of political power, the world would be a much freer place. We ought to be intolerant. We ought to be intolerant of the very things that politicians and religious leaders and generals want us to be accepting of. The norm for the world and of human institutions is the very source of pain that we should be intolerant of. This idea that he would use sectarianism here as opposed to what he will admit later. Well, halfway. He will accept the fact that the sectarian intolerance is focused in the land of Muslims. But then he will disassociate Islam as the source of that intolerance. And that's to say that there is one thing that all of the terrorism and hate mongering and wars today have in common, Islam. And yet what we're going to do is completely disassociate the one thing they have in common from them. And while doing so, we're also going to completely disassociate that religion's scriptures from the religion's behaviors, both of which has to be done. To create a caricature, to create an illusion, to create a revisionist view that allows for the promotion of this man's caustic agenda. Hopelessness is a direct derivative of politics, of militarism, of economic scams, and particularly of religion. There is always been and only been hopelessness in Islam. Islam had 100 years, called their golden years, in a 1,400-year history that occurred immediately after Muhammad's death, when Muslims became the most vicious barbarians the world had ever known. During a period of time, they killed well over 100 million people. They plundered the world. They robbed people of their life, of their property, their dignity. And they hauled the treasure back to the coffers of Islam's maniacal leaders. That world thievery, plunder, was the source of Islam's only golden period. And it's because of the 8th surah, where stealing is pronounced as being lawful and good, as is kidnap, as is war, as is terrorism. Hopelessness is inseparable from Islam. And it's inseparable from Islam because free enterprise won't work in Islam. And without free enterprise, there really is no hope of a prosperous economy. When China went from being a poor country, where we used to say in America, you better eat your vegetables because there's starving children in China, to now China being the world's leading manufacturing country, the world's fastest growing economy, it's because economically China went from a controlled socialist economy to a free enterprise economy. During the same time, America went from a free enterprise economy to a managed, centrally managed socialist economy. And wealth redistribution became the order of the day in America. While we find in the world of China that wealth creation was now the order of the day. Well, in Islam, there is no hope of economic prosperity through free enterprise for lots of reasons. One of which is you require truth and fair play and honesty, of which there is none in Islam.
Because there is no hope in Islam. Muhammad never gave Muslims a reason to live, only a reason to die. Death is not a hopeful scenario. One of the things that comes across when you read the Quran and Hadith is that Muhammad never worked a day in his life. He's kind of like Obama in that way. Never held a job. Likewise, those who congregated with Muhammad never worked. The only job that Muhammad and his cadre of jihadists ever perpetrated was that of terrorists. They were raiders. They were pirates. They were militants. They were thieves. They were kidnappers. They were slave traders. Now, I do not consider those honorable occupations. They don't create any value. They simply take value that other people have created. And so that's all that exists in Islam. In fact, there's hadith in Islam, oral reports from Muhammad and his companions, that show the first Muslims watching people actually do work and saying, you know, that's just such an odd thing that they're harvesting dates, for example. And they just watch them lazing around because in Islam, the only economy was the economy that created the golden era of Islam. Barbarism, terrorism, extraordinarily vicious thieving raids. That's all Islam has ever known. It's never been any different. Now, there is an exception in today's world if you don't look closely. That would be considered the Black Age of Islam, where the black ooze from the soils beneath their fiefdoms has been used to create an illusion of prosperity. Again, all of the workers are foreigners. They're not Muslims. They import the workers because Muslims don't work. The buildings are designed and built by non-Muslims. The oil wells are built, designed by non-Muslims, as are the refining apparatus. But the world ever so stupid in terms of its leaders, enabled the OPEC monopoly, and then watched as the OPECers used their ill-gotten gain, the black era of Islam, to finance all means of Islamic terrorism. And Islam became as savage as it was in the days of Muhammad. That's the history that's true. Non-revisionist. What this president is opposed to, and he will say throughout his speech, is extremism. It's what Yahweh is in favor of, that this man opposes. Obama would view anything as extremism that isn't in sync with political correctness, that isn't in sync with the socialist ideology, that isn't in sync with man controlling all men. He would view as extremist anything that is in opposition to his new covenant for humankind. And yet, Yahweh is opposed to everything that he stands for. If we are not extreme in this world, the one in a million who walks away from politics, who walks away from government dependence, who walks away from supporting a military patriotically, who walks away from any affiliation with any religion. If we are not among those who go in the opposite direction, who appear extreme among humanity, because we oppose the institution that humans revere, then we have no place in the covenant. Then we cannot know God. Then we cannot be saved by Him. It is an extreme about face that takes us to God. And it is being extreme in one's evaluation and rejection of religion, of lies, of politics, of economic schemes of man, as well as his political and military prowess, that put us in a position where we can engage with God. But Barack Hussein Obama has declared war on extremism. And we're going to listen to his words, and we're going to expose and condemn his words. We're going to reject his words, because he spoke as will the Torahless one, known as the Antichrist, in our immediate future. Folks, that is so interesting. And it is extraordinarily telling. It drives right to the heart of darkness. Mr. Obama told the 193 nations gathered at the World's Forum, on issue after issue, we cannot rely on a rule book written for a different century, end quote. Now, why would I say that's such a dark, menacing statement? Now, I'm sure that there are some who are listening to this program. Kirk, for example. Larry, for example. James, for example. Richard, for example. Don is another example. There are some who are listening to this program who just heard those words, and they recognize their direct association with the most famous imposter of all time, the most infamous man who ever lived. The plague of death, according to Yahweh, Paul, the author of the Christian New Testament. He said the same thing on issue after issue. We cannot rely on a rule book written for a different century. He discarded the Torah and came up with his new rule book, his New Testament. When Muhammad followed Paul by some 600 years, Muhammad took the same approach. We cannot rely on issue after issue on a rule book written for a different century. Instead, he proposed his Quran. This is the stuff of religion. It's to discard the old. Even if the old is the word of God, especially if the old is the word of God, especially if the rule book is the Torah. We must, on issue after issue, stop relying on a rule book written for a different century. We must write our own. This will be the same line proposed by the Torahless one, known to Christians as the Antichrist, as he is going to emerge on the world scene in the next dozen years. And word after word from that point on, the President of the United States laid out his agenda for the New World Order, for his new rule book, for his new behavior manifesto, for his revisionist view not only of history, so that his future could be consistent with a history that he has imagined, but all facts were convoluted. And hypocrisy, pure, unabated hypocrisy, prevailed. Nothing else. I'm going to go right to the speech. And I don't know how long it's going to take us to cover it, but it's worth the investment of our time. Because we're not only witnessing in these words the absolute collapse of the United States of America. We're not only witnessing evil completely exposed, the very heart of satanic darkness. We're witnessing the adversarial position to God as articulated by the socialist secular humanist. We know the position in opposition to Yahweh offered by Islam. It's Quran, Torah, and God Allah. It's Messenger Muhammad. We understand the adversarial position to Yahweh offered by Pauline Christianity. We understand the adversarial position to Yahweh and his Torah that is advocated by Rabbinic Judaism. But we don't very often see, at least this bluntly, this boldly, the opposition to Yahweh and to his Torah as expressed and seen by socialist secular humanists, by the New World Order. That is what we see in these words. Mr. President, Mr. Secretary General, fellow delegates, ladies and gentlemen, we come together. We come together. I want you to recognize that under my words, we come together at a crossroads between war and peace. What he says is peace is war. What he calls war is the peace before the storm. Between disorder and integration. In his view, to be integrated with the greater whole is a good. To be disordered or disassociated, the antithesis of integration is to be disassociated, to be disintegrated, is bad. But yet, it is God's position that if we wish to be integrated into his covenant, we must be disassociated from everything that would be considered part of a world order. From political schemes, military schemes, religious schemes. Between fear and hope. From his view, peace, integration, and hope are unified. Integration, from his point of view, a world order, is hopeful, as opposed to a world disassociated is fearful. Now, I'm here to tell you exactly the opposite is true. Every time somebody has tried to unify the world and to integrate the world, there has been war, not peace. Every time that has occurred, there has been disorder. Every time that has occurred, fear reigned. The very thing that he is promoting requires an absolute ignorance of world history. When the Roman Empire sought total integration, there was war and fear. When the Greeks attempted the same thing, there was war and fear. When the Babylonians sought to achieve integration, there was war and fear. In the modern era, when Russia attempted world integration under socialism, there was war and fear. When the Brits before them, in their imperialistic moves around the planet, attempted integration, there was war and fear. When Adolf Hitler, between the two, attempted world integration, there was war and fear. When people attend to their own business, there is peace and hope. If we want to experience peace and hope, we need to reject the world's institutions, to stand away from them, to disassociate from them. The single best way, for example, to deal with the impetus today of 99.9% of the world's terrorist acts and war, which is being perpetrated by a single religion, Islam, is to disassociate from Islam, to expose it, to condemn it, to outlaw it, to quarantine it, to completely disengage, stop buying black ooze from Islamic countries. Stop providing Islamic countries with weapons. Stop invading Islamic countries. Disengage. Quarantine. And while Muslims will continue to kill Muslims, they will do so far less successfully, because they won't have the weapons to do so in mass, and they will be unable to kill anyone other than a Muslim. Leave them alone. Treat Islam as if it were Ebola. The opposite of what he is hoping for is what is true. When we attempt as humans to integrate the world, there is war. There is fear. Hope exists and peace begins when we disassociate from human institutions, from politics, from patriotism, from militarism, from jaundiced economic schemes, and especially from religion. He went on to say, around the globe, there are signposts of progress. Speaking to the Islamic world, the most favored book among Islamic jihadists is Signposts Along the Way. It is written by Qutb. It is his rebuttal to Yahweh. He is anti-Zionist, as is this president. Zion means signposts along the way. A Zionist is someone who pays attention to and reads those signposts along the way. The way is the seven-step path that leads from our corrupt religious, political, and militaristic world to God's peaceful and hopeful set-apart home. But you see, the signpost of progress for this president is his new covenant. And it's signposts that lead away from Zionism. The shadow of world war that existed at the founding of this institution has been lifted, the prospect of war between major powers reduced. That's untrue in both situations. Obama nearly started World War III when he began to position American military assets to bomb Damascus a year or so ago. The Russians intervened. America almost started a world war with Russia when it maneuvered the thugs in Kiev to overturn the popularly elected government and then financed and directed the Ukrainians to wage war against the ethnic Russians. Twice we've faced world war. Belligerent president of the United States has pushed the world to the precipice of war three times. Twice, his global war intent was thwarted. Both times against the Russians, when the Russians resolved the issue of the chemical weapons in Syria that nearly ignited World War III. And next, in the Ukraine, when the Russians, who were not a party to the battle as America was, proposed a peace treaty that has resonated and has taken hold. The Russians twice have stopped America's global intent on war, on world war. In China, we have pushed the Chinese, or in the Pacific, we have pushed the Chinese to the point of war. We've been so antagonistic towards the Chinese, they have doubled, some say tripled, their investment in weapons. Because this president, in the past 6 years, has unleashed one salvo after another, declaring that the impetus of America's foreign political might will be focused against China, establishing bases in the Pacific, building the Pacific Fleet, engaging them in a hostile fashion, but to provoke China. Then spying on China while accusing China of spying on the United States. Accusing China of environmental catastrophe while suing China for rare earth metals that require an economic disaster to unearth. Now, the world is at the edge of war. Far more so than it has been under any administration of the United States. And it's all because of the belligerent, caustic, poisonous diatribe that spews out of Obama's mouth. He says hundreds of millions of human beings have been freed from the prison of poverty, with the proportion of those living in extreme poverty cut in half. That's not true. There's been no relief whatsoever in the Islamic world. In fact, it's gone backwards after his speech in Cairo, the speech that ignited the Islamic Reformation that spread the wildfire of war that is now consuming that part of the world. There is far more poverty throughout the nations affected by that speech. The Central African Republic, Nigeria, of course, Libya, which is in total chaos. The same thing would be true as we move to Egypt, which is economically bankrupt. Yemen, in an economic crisis. Syria, total economic collapse. A downturn in Turkey's economy as it's become ever more fundamentalist Islamic. And then through West Africa, Ebola is destroying economies, but economies were already ravaged by civil war. The economy of the Republic of South Africa is in horrible shape. And as you look at places like Japan, doing everything they can to stop absolute economic collapse. Conditions in Korea are no different, in North Korea, than they previously were. Economic conditions and throughout Europe are worse than they were before he took office. What he has said here is the opposite of what's true. As a matter of fact, the prison population of the United States is rising, and poverty is rising around the world. And that's in large part because wealth redistribution does not work. You do not create wealth. You do not take people out of poverty by redistributing wealth, by taking it from those who are productive and giving it to those who are not productive. That has never worked. It does not rise as a tide. It destroys people's initiative. The more America gives to the poor in Gaza, the more poor there are in Gaza, because the money is never used to build an economy, but to instead conceive the weapons of war. And so there is more poverty than ever before. He then said the world continues to strengthen after the world's worst financial crisis of our lives. And actually, no, it's getting worse. We're not recovering, and it wasn't the worst crisis.